The Afternoon Show with Christian Arcan and Andy Hart starts now on WEEI.
Good afternoon. Welcome in WEEI Afternoons here. It's Christian Arcan. It's Andy Hart. Nice to have you with us here today. It's a Patriots Friday. Although we're not starting with a Patriots cut, we're starting off here with a what could be big news in the AFC East. The Buffalo Bills come away with a dominant win over the Miami Dolphins, but that's not the story. The story is Tua Tagovailoa, who, as you just heard there, trying to pick up a first down, scrambling up the middle, goes head first, diving right into the gut there of DeMar Hamlin, and goes down with a concussion, taken out of the game. Bad history for him, and we start there. First of all, I need to apologize to Andy Hart. I made it sound like you weren't on the show at all today during the crossover there. I just meant simply you're not in studio with me today, but you are very much a part of the show today.
Host 2 reporting for duty.
Very good, sir. All right, good. Thank you, Host 2. Host 1 appreciates it. Let's go ahead and start right there then. This news here in the NFL and the AFC East, this recurring problem now with Tua Tagovailoa. The last time he went down with these kind of concussions, people talked about his career being over. That was 2-3 years ago. Now you see another example of this in a sort of eerie kind of way. I mean, between him and DeMar Hamlin, those are probably the two guys in the league right now that have made more people sort of cringe and turn away from the team. You know, like these are sort of the two emblematic guys in the NFL right now when it comes to how dangerous the sport is and everything else. And it was the two of them colliding right there, Tua going down with that injury. You saw him not quite convulsing on the field, but definitely there was a reaction there with his arms taken out with a concussion. That's however many now in the last couple of years. What does this mean for the Dolphins? Is he going to play again this year? Do you think he plays again ever?
It's a great question, because I was just watching Antonio Pierce was holding his press conference out in Las Vegas, and he said flat out, and this is interesting to me, a coach of another team being this honest, I would tell him to retire. It's not worth it. And I think there are a lot of people that probably believe that. I know there was Tony Gonzalez was on Twitter immediately saying probably time to hang it up. And this is an interesting timeline, because the one thing is he did get his money. He got his big contract in the offseason, so he and the future generations of his family are taken care of, so he doesn't have to really consider that. It's more about the love of the game and what he wants to do. I would say, I mean, we are not, none of us are neurologists. We have no idea what the hell's going on in his head.
Right.
But, I mean, you just look at that. And the hit itself, as you put it, he didn't take a hellacious hit. He just kind of went down and ran into the gut of DeMar Hamlin. Now, his head did snap back at sort of a weird angle. But, you know, you see far bigger hits every Saturday, every Sunday, every Friday night on football fields everywhere. And that's where I think you start to wonder, is he just damaged goods? Is he susceptible to these more frequently moving forward? Because there was one at Alabama, 3 in the NFL. He made it through last year. I know there was the talk that he did jiu-jitsu to avoid the falling and hitting the turf hits to his head. But the reality
is, did the jiu-jitsu class have him diving head first in the defender? Because, I mean, that's what happened. Like, I feel bad for the guy, but that wasn't a bad hit. That was on him, unfortunately. Like, you hate to even say that, but that was his decision.
Oh, he initiated
the contact, yeah.
100%. And I want to get into a little bit later, because I was listening to Alex Van Pelt on with Jones and Keefe, and he was talking a little bit about how they teach their quarterbacks to avoid these things. And one of them was, that I found interesting, he said something to the effect, don't slide late in traffic, because we've all seen that. You slide late, and then the linebacker kind of naturally, the only place he has to hit is your head, because he's already sort of started the process. But this was not an example of that. This was kind of a nothing play, except immediately you saw him do that weird, what do they call it, the fencing reaction or the fencing pose.
The stance or whatever,
And as soon as you saw that, and you know who he is, and you know the history, and then you saw him weirdly again limping off, which I don't know, was that related to the concussion, not related to the concussion? Because last time this was an issue, if you remember, it greatly affected his ability to be mobile, to walk. His legs gave way. He fell down. So, no, this was, you know, not to get on our high horse, but this is the thing you hate to see, even though you know football is a barbaric, archaic game. I always go back to that. We can do anything we want. Oh, kickoffs, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. This is barbaric to have collisions of this type, and you never know which one is going to be the one that does do some damage like this. So, yeah, if you're his mother, who already asked him to retire, I believe after 2022, he acknowledged, you have to be rooting for that, right? You have to be hoping for that.
Yeah, hoping that he decides to hang up his cleats. Now, there's a provision in his contract that has to do with injuries, and that's something that could end up, like, if he gets cleared by the doctors to play and he says, no, I can't play anymore, it's too dangerous for me, then they can screw him out of his money, basically, and this is right. The NFL. Like, they'll try to, you know they will. If he has a career-ending injury and the team doctors decide, okay, you can't ever play football again, then he gets all his money. So it's going to be very interesting to see what the Dolphins do here. I mean, they have a real decision to make. No one wants to give away $130 million, whatever it is, $125 million to a guy who can't help them and can't really do anything for them, but you also don't want to be the one who's like, yeah, you can go out there and play again. You can go out there and continue to bash your brain into applesauce, and that's fine with us. Like, they have a real decision to make here, and I have no idea which way they're going to go.
Well, I mean, the medical aspect is one thing, because I think we're still on the forefront of concussions. Like, there is no way to truly say, oh, you failed this blood test, right?
Right.
Like, so you can never play again. There's some gray area there. And I think, you know, places like Nowitzki and BU and the study of it and all of that, he will have advocates on his side if he wants somebody to try to validate his desire to no longer play. I'd also say the guy we just listened to, his head coach, Mike McDaniel, If Tua says, I can't do this anymore, and that guy leads an organization that tries to screw him out of his money, that guy's one of the all-time great frauds. Because don't come to the podium in tears and I'm just thinking about my teammate and then say, oh, and by the way, Tua, get your ass back out there on the field as soon as they clear you, because we ain't paying you if you don't. He will become one of the great frauds of our generation.
I agree with that, although that does seem like a decision over his head, doesn't it? I mean, that's not Stephen Ross? Yeah.
I could see him doing that.
Sure.
He's the guy that wanted to pay him to lose. Like, there's a lot of questions about Stephen Ross's. But if I'm Mike McDaniel, you have to influence that decision, right? You're the leader of that football team. Stephen Ross is not the leader. He's the owner, but he's not the leader. Mike McDaniel is the leader. And that's a guy that twice in the last week has been basically in tears at the podium. And if that man tries to force one of his players who's gone through four concussions over the last 2 years, 2+ years, back onto the field in some sort of financial strong arm, he can't. He would lose all credibility, in my opinion.
Any chance that Tua comes back this year? It seems hard to believe at this point, doesn't it?
I think there's always a chance, because A, he seems to love the game of football.
He does.
Like, he truly is fully invested in the game of football. And if the Dolphins clear him and he wants to play, who is anyone else to tell him he can't? I mean, he's a grown adult. Even his mother can't say you can't play. Like, she doesn't have to sign off on it. He's not a minor. It's not that extra signature in, like, high school sport forms. So who are we to tell him what to do if he wants to do it? And I do think, I mean,
it's like buying a guy a carton of cigarettes when he's got lung cancer, you know? Like, I mean, that's sort of what it is at this point.
But he's allowed. He's an adult.
He's allowed to.
You
sure
know what I mean?
Yeah, right. But
so,
if his job doesn't have something in place saying, hey, you know, we have a line at some point here where we're gonna draw a line in the sand with all this, that's something that's going to reflect on them, I think. And maybe they don't care. I mean, they've shown in the past to the tune of about $700 million or whatever that lawsuit was that they don't really care that much. But this is right in everybody's face.
Yes, but it was in our face 2 years ago, and we kind of forgot about it, right? Thanks to playing all of last year, and there is no question that the fact that DeMar Hamlin is involved in this,
I know,
is eerie, weird. I don't even know what the word is, because I lived this, by the way, in the Teddy Bruschi return season. All I thought was, God, I don't... I cover sports. I don't want to do news. I don't want to do life and death and things of that nature. So please let Teddy Bruschi just come back and be a... And he was fine. But it took a while before you would think, Teddy Bruschi makes a hit. Is he fine? Teddy Bruschi makes a hit. Is he fine? And then at some point, you accepted that he was back and he was playing football and he was healthy again. I think we had done that with Tua, and we were basically had done that with DeMar Hamlin, who's now a starter for them, who now actually plays defense for them, is taking on an elevated role. And then for those two to collide in a primetime game that everybody's watching, that's the other thing. This is not some random Saturday afternoon. There's seven games on, and you have to see it on the red zone. The whole football world was on Amazon Prime watching this live, like we've seen before in some of these instances. It was eerie. It was crazy. But if Tua wants to come back, can anybody really step in and say, no, I don't really think that structure is, if he's cleared medically, right? A doctor, a neurologist could say, no, you're not allowed to return. But if he's cleared medically and he wants to play, even if 80% of the world believes he shouldn't, then I think he has the right to return.
I agree. I think you're right. I mean, listen, we're all still adults here, and these are adults making adult decisions. I do wonder what goes into the decision to clear somebody after his third concussion in 2 years. You know, like, this is a guy who now has a problem with this. I think he's on, you know, you got to be on some sort of list when you get concussions. You get checked on the sideline. You go through the protocol. They've instituted new rules around this very thing. And I wonder now if it starts to compound in this way, if there's some sort of trigger in the CBA or something that says, hey, you know, after a certain amount of these or a certain amount of symptoms or whatever it may be, it's beyond can he play this week. It becomes more of a long-term health question, and that's when we have to intervene. Like, I mean, you know, like, it seems like they've tried to, at the very least, take steps, maybe superficial steps, but take steps towards preventing this exact type of thing.
Yeah, and then you get into the financials, as you referenced earlier, but the financials the other way. If the whole world thinks he shouldn't be out there and you allow him to go back out there, are there repercussions on the back end if something truly tragic happens, right? You know, does the family have repercussions? And
right.
I know, again, Taylor Twellman is very active in this area. His career ended. Like, there's been a lot of guys over the year. Mike Wright. I still remember Mike Wright. I don't know if you remember the Patriots defensive lineman whose career ended because of concussions, and talking to him about it and talking to him about life. You know, one of those things where you're in a dark room for 30 days because lights, really, you can't watch TV, you can't be in lights and things of that nature. Tua avoided that the first time around with those three concussions. You know, how long is he going to continue to be fortunate and lucky? And what is the long-term damage that's already been done, right? I mean, he's one of those brains that I'm sure BU and those groups would love to study 40 years from now. Hopefully he has a long, happy life and whatever, but love to study and then tie it into what happened and how it was handled back at the time of the incidents over the last couple of years. No, there's just, and then that's not even to decide the forces of football. This is a Dolphins team that's supposed to have one of the best offenses in football.
Right.
They just signed him to a $200 million deal. They want to compete for Super Bowls. And now what? Now, what kind of pressure does that put on him to get back out there? What kind of pressure does that put on Mike McDaniel to get him back out there? Or do they just go in a totally different direction? Like, I saw people immediately speculating Tom Brady, Mac Jones, all these other options. So it's just crazy on a seemingly nothing run, you know, little four-yard run up. We see a million of those, right?
Yeah.
All the time from all these quarterbacks. Jacoby Brissett ran seven times last week. Josh Allen last week was diving into the end zone, hurtling people. We see it every week.
Geno Smith was running into the end zone. Guys were running, yeah.
We see it every, and you just don't think how quickly, boom. Everything changed for Tua and the Miami Dolphins on that one play.
Yeah, and obviously the Dolphins have to keep on fielding a team and putting someone out there at quarterback.
Right.
Skylar Thompson, is that his name? Skylar,
yep.
Yeah.
That's him.
He's the backup. He didn't do much in the time that he had out there. By the way, Tua didn't do too much either before he got hurt. Buffalo dominated this game, and it wasn't really ever very close once the second quarter got done. I mean, this game was over at the half, I'd say. And you never really felt like the Dolphins were getting back into it. They were on a long drive when this injury happened. It was like a 14-play drive or something, and they were at like play 8 or 9, I want to say, in the drive, and they didn't get anywhere. But it was one of the few times they were able to move the ball against that Bills defense, which picked two off twice, one of them a pick six, and really looks pretty good despite losing all those players that they had. The Dolphins offense, on the other hand, looked like it was stuck in the mud, and you wonder now, what are they going to do? Is Skylar Thompson going to be the answer going forward? Hard to believe that that's the way that they go for weeks 3 through 17 here. The big fun answer to this question is Tom Brady. It seems as though there's just way too much standing in the way here, be it his Fox duties, which I'm sure he could probably shirk if he needed to, but the whole thing with the Raiders, like, he can't even go into other teams' buildings right now and sit in on production meetings, but now all of a sudden he's going to play for the Dolphins. Like, there would have to be a divestment there. It doesn't seem like that's something he wants to really do. I'm skeptical that this could even get off the ground, but Tom Brady, TB12 in Miami. Andy, what say you?
Well, I mean, that was the original rumor, right? That created all the issues. That created the Flores,
right?
The whole everything that he was going to Miami.
Go meet on the boat, right? Yeah,
right. The whole thing. I just don't know. And for, the Raiders thing is certainly part of it. I'm sure he could end that pursuit, divest, whatever, if he really wanted to, and say, "I want to come back." And there's reason to. That's a talented football team with two elite receivers that I'm sure he would love to throw to. But the flip side of that is, could they even do it? Because if you watched the game last night, you realize how much Tua does in that offense, the running game, just all these little flips and turns and fakes and pumps and everything they do in the running game, that's not Tom Brady. Tom Brady ain't doing any of that crap. And almost nobody can, because Tua's been doing it for 3 years now with Mike McDaniel. I think Mike McDaniel, we may all have a certain perception of Tua, how good he is, would we want him, whatever. Mike McDaniel fell for Tua. And that relationship, like, he was all in.
He kisses the ground he walks on.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And they have invested significant time in doing all that. There was one last night where there was some, it was like a little ball fake and then a no-look pitch. Like, who else is doing that right off the street? Nobody. So you're changing the entirety of your offense, your entire run game, and there's pressures because you got these two elite receivers that want the ball, but how do you get them the ball? Do we go to just a more traditional drop-back passing game? I don't think Brady makes a lot of sense long-term. Mac Jones is an interesting one, because if you believe that he's smart and he comes from the same college scheme as Tua,
yep,
and he's accurate, he has a weak arm, but he's accurate, right? Like, he kind of fits the Tua mold in some sense. I would look into that one. I know Carson Wentz was another name that was immediately brought up. I would not. I think Carson Wentz stinks, and he's a human turnover machine. I find Mac Jones the most interesting one.
I agree.
Weird to me.
I agree with you 100%. I think Mac Jones could do well in that offense. And really, I mean, the other backup quarterbacks with any starter experience, I break down into a couple of groups. There's the old guys, which is Joe Flacco, Carson Wentz, Andy Dalton, and like Jameis Winston. The guys who were never good, like Mitch Trubisky, Mason Rudolph, Stidham, Kenny Pickett. All these ex-Steelers quarterbacks for some reason, Drew Locke and Davis Mills. And then there's the last group, which is Aiden O'Connell, Sam Howell, Jake Browning. I'd even throw that Badgen kid in there in Chicago,
yep,
and Mac. And I'd take Mac over all those guys. I mean, I think that's kind of clear. He played with Waddle in college. He can run a good offense with real weapons, I think. That's what the Dolphins are. And I just wonder what the Jags would be asking for him now, because he might be a valuable trade chip for them, and they may not want to let go of him. I mean, listen, if Trevor Lawrence goes down with an injury, that's a pretty good backup to have right there.
Hello.
Compared to the other QBs, the backup QBs I just listed. That list makes Mac Jones look pretty good.
Who knew that this, you know, a week and a game into the regular season, Mac Jones would suddenly be a commodity?
The bell of the ball, yeah.
No, I'm just kidding.
That laugh, I'll never get or enjoy that laugh. But
it's even weirder to, like, see it. Like, you know how he does that laugh where he thinks something's really funny, where he, like,
oh, yeah,
opens his mouth wet, like
yep,
a snake eating a yeah, deer, you know?
Yeah, oh, yeah, I saw.
He's like, ha, ha, ha. It's like, whoa,
like a
buddy,
puppet. He's got a little puppet to it. Yeah, no, but it's a weird fit that I do think would work, and, you know, you could probably try, his future's in question, so the desire for a big contract down the road, because they're going to, if two is done, the financials are going to be a consideration for them. I don't know how they necessarily work through salary cap and two is financials and getting another quarterback that's, you know, worth the money, potentially, or getting a guy that maybe is a holdover like Mac. Could you pay him for a year or two at a low level? They have, that organization has a lot to think about in the next few days, weeks, and months, but
you won't have to make a big commitment to Mac Jones. I mean, you'd get him on the scrap heap, and then if he plays well, you can decide what to do the next year. I mean, that's an easy one. You know, there's not really a lot of backups that have much money attached to him outside of our guy here, Jacoby Brissett, but he's a starter.
He's a starter. He's not a backup.
Right.
Treat him as such until it changes.
He's making backup money is what I'm saying. But, yeah,
good
it's
Lord,
like a lot of backup money.
But if I were McDaniel, I'm looking for, because, again, I think there's an investment to try to run the offense the way I want to run it.
Right.
Like, I'm trying to get a guy that isn't just the fill-in for now. Maybe I can develop. And maybe Skylar Thompson is their guy. I know the quotes after the game were positive. Oh, he's a lot different guy. He's developed a lot. We trust him, which is what virtually every coach has to say about the backup that's coming in.
Yeah, nah, he sucks.
Well, other than Dick Vermeil. Dick
right,
Vermeil bawled his eyes out. And when Kurt Warner was coming
and
ironically,
yeah,
Kurt Warner became one of the greatest quarterbacks and the, you know, Hall of Fame quarterback, the greatest show on turf. But
in fairness, Dick Vermeil would cry if his toast came out burnt a little too much. So, like, that's, you know, that was sort of his thing.
Yeah, he's a crier. That's fine. Jacoby Brissett's a crier. We're all criers.
Maybe you can ask him
11
questions about it in an interview.
It was a back and forth that was quick, you jackwagon. You could ask him if the history of the franchise changed because they won one game on opening day in Cincinnati.
He said it did.
We're going to start. He was just being nice.
I don't think so. I think he answered that honestly.
Because guess what? Nothing changed. They can still go 1-16. He'll be out soon, and he's going to be replaced by the other guy. So nothing really changed.
You should tell him all this next time we interview him.
Maybe I will.
Sounds like
you're making me in a mood now.
Sounds like good stuff here. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. The Buffalo Bills, I mean, they're for real, right? Like, this is two straight games now where they've put up over 30 points. It was an ugly start to that Arizona game, but this one, I mean, they dominated this one from the rip. So I think it's time to stop. And I'm guilty of this. I thought that the Bills would have a real hard time here without all those guys on defense, without Steph Diggs. Looks like they haven't missed a beat.
So you don't think the path in the AFC East has opened up a little bit? Miami's got no quarterback. Buffalo's quarterback's wearing a glove. Did you see that?
I did see that. Didn't seem to bother him that much, but yes, I did see that. I do think Miami's got some questions to answer here, but I still think the Patriots are a good, solid rung below the Jets and certainly below the Bills.
Well, there's also a question as to, I mean, Jacoby Brissett had a nice first week. Maybe Skylar Thompson and Jacoby Brissett are equals. And if they're equals, they got the better weapons. I'd much rather have, you know, Tyreek Hill busting free for 80 yards.
Yeah, but who has a better run game, right? I mean, Nation's a good runner, but he's hurt. Well, and Mostert's hurt, too. Yeah, they're not
them when they're healthy. But that's where I get back to. I'm going to assume Skylar Thompson can run their run game the way Tua has because he's been there long enough. So he's been getting, even if he's only been getting the 15 or 10 or 5% of the reps that normal backups do, not the 30% that Drake May gets, he should have learned the offense by now, right? He should be able to do what Mike McDaniel wants to do. And isn't that part of that system, that scheme? The 49ers, doesn't matter what quarterback, we're going to run the ball, right? Like, that's part of our base. And then if we get a decent quarterback in Purdy, it'll take off. So Mike McDaniel, everybody wants to call him an offensive genius, and I've heard people talk about, is he the best coach in the division? I don't know if you think he's the best coach in the division, but if you think he's the best coach in the division.
I think he's the best coach in the division.
Okay, so go earn your stripes. Your quarterback's hurt. You got a backup you've had for a few years. You got great weapons still. You got running game, right? Like, go earn your stripes as a coach. When the quarterback goes down, if your team falls apart, how good a coach are you?
Yeah, and I'll tell you who has a history of making his coaches look good. That's Mac Jones. 617-779-7937. There's your phone number. We got a lot to get to today on a Patriots Friday. We do have a little bit of Red Sox we'll get to. Yankees walking off on them last night as the Sox get dominated by another lefty. Might be time to bust out the forks there and stick them right in the Red Sox. We also have our Seahawks scouting report coming up a little bit later on. We'll make our picks in the 4 o'clock hour. And this week in social media, you know what it's about this week. That's right. It's about Big Unc Shannon Sharp and his mishap on Instagram Live. That's all coming up in just a little bit. I don't know why, but I don't believe that last part.
Nope.
Gary's like, and I'm also commenting about the past game. Ha, ha, I thought I forgot. Ha, ha.
It's like, anytime you throw something in late like that, you wasn't top of mind. You don't really believe it. It's
like
kind of fake.
The very last thing you could possibly. Can you isolate that, just the very last part of that? Because we know they're going to run the ball. He's talking about it. He's been talking about it all week long. This is our thing. We're running the ball, and I'm going to let everybody know about it. And we also have confidence in the pass game.
It's let's make sure. Let's get back to what we did the first half and then regain control. So we'll always look to run the ball. And I feel pretty confident about passing the ball as well.
Do you now, Gerard?
Nope.
Well, I'm convinced.
You know what that was? That was because it didn't need to be said.
Well, right.
Was everybody going to freak out if he just said, we'll always look to run the ball?
It would have been a headline, so. I think. I mean, it was a headline last time.
He
and
has
it
said
would be
it already.
Again. Yeah, I know. But
he keeps saying it, and it's clear. You know why it's clear? Because the best player on the Patriots right now, certainly on the offense, is Ramondre Stevenson.
Right.
Like, you should want to run the football. Did anybody watch that game? He was awesome. I really do think it was the best game of his career. It wasn't the highest yardage, but it was the best game of his career, making people miss, breaking tackles, doing what his team needed him to do when he needed to do it to win the game. And so isn't that coaching one-on-one? Lean on your strengths.
Absolutely.
Utilize your strengths, matchups. So I think this was another example. I don't think Gerard needed to say that. I think bringing up the passing game the way he did almost diminished the passing game. It was like, it would have been just better if you had stopped talking.
Don't even mention it. But like, it sounds like an afterthought, and it's sort of being treated like one so far too. And maybe it has to be because they don't have much of one, and this is the way they have to run their offense. But I understand. I mean, it makes sense. Before we dive too deep into this, I just wanted to address a couple of texts. A lot of people angry in the text board right now. Andy saying, I can't believe you idiots think that Tom Brady would be better than would not be better than Mac Jones for the Miami Dolphins. Which, first of all, I don't think either of us said that.
No,
Tom Brady is 47 years years old, first of all, by the way, everybody. Let's not, you know, we're not talking about prime Tom Brady here. He hasn't played in 2 years. But even then, I still think he'd probably be better than Mac Jones. It's just there's no bleeping way that he's going to be able to get out of all the stuff that he's in right now, mostly the ownership situation with the Raiders, and become a player again. I just don't think that he's going to forfeit all that and all that money to come and play for however much they're going to pay him to finish the year in Miami. I just don't think that that's realistic. I mean, he's financially much better off right now not playing, and he would have to undo all of that in order to be eligible to be picked up at all. So if we're talking about what's realistic here, Mac Jones, out of the rest of the choices of current NFL quarterbacks who are in the league right now on a roster or on a practice squad somewhere, Mac Jones probably gives you the best chance.
And then what kind of offense are they going to run?
Right.
Are they going to run what Tom wants to do? Are they going to turn everything
probably,
over to...
yes. They'll probably...
Damn right.
Okay, so that would be Tom. Challenging. Wouldn't you say that's challenging? Hey, even you had a long week. It was a Thursday night game. So you're going to tell me you can get Tom Brady down there and he can teach Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle and they can come up with an offense with that everybody can be comfortable with?
Yes.
The run game. I don't think that's realistic.
Five steps and crisscross. That's all you got to do. Unstoppable play. No one can stop. No
Tom's just
going to
go
it.
In the huddle. Tom's just going to show. So you do this.
Yeah.
You do this. And whichever one of you is open, I'll throw you the ball.
Yeah, basically. I mean, I think that's sort of what he did in Tampa Bay, isn't it? Like, you know, he went down there. Him and Byron Leftwich. I don't think it was some big Leftwich offense.
He got
I
there
think Brady
in March.
Took care of it, and he made that happen. Yeah.
He got there in March, and he brought Gronk and Antonio Brown with him.
That's true.
Now he's just showing up and installing an offense in September, and Mike McDaniel's just supposed to say, yeah, Tom, you do whatever you want to do, Tom. I'll just hang out over here and vape. I'll get my little pen out.
That sounds like a pretty good deal, if I'm Mike McDaniel, you know?
Or a
Tom
disaster.
Brady's here. He gets to do everything. I get to take credit for it. I get to sit here with my G-Pen or whatever and just rip this thing all day while Brady's out there throwing touchdown passes. That sounds okay. That sounds like an okay lot in life, to be perfectly honest with you.
What if Tom has expired? What if Sunday was the expiration? Like, we realized, oh, wait, he's not the golden goose anymore. He's not. He can't do everything. Not everything works out for him, and not everything's perfect anymore.
All the bad reviews of his broadcasting career shake his confidence, and now he can't
Absolutely.
Throw a ball anymore either.
And he's got a what was it yesterday? What was that archery thing that you were all excited about premature?
Oh, right. What was that called? Now I forget. What was the name of that? Remember that guy called in about it? The archery.
Yeah, what if
yips?
Tom Brady has that? What
if
he ruined
called?
His confidence?
Oh, man. I can't remember what it's called. But yeah.
Target panic?
Target panic. Yes. Target panic. That's exactly right. In the premature release, which happens when you get real bad target panic.
Bad target panic.
Could be. I don't know. I feel
I
like
think
that,
we all suffer from that.
I have. I don't think that is something Tom Brady has to worry about. You know, Tom Brady's 47. I don't think he's got.
What if he's toast?
I mean, maybe.
He's got the opposite of that.
He could certainly be toast. I mean, that's entirely possible. And listen, that last season there in Tampa, they didn't win the Super Bowl. Like, you know, that wasn't a great season for him.
Toast.
But he wasn't toast. I mean, he could still go out and play, and everybody expected him to keep playing. And I don't know. I think that if they did bring him in, it wouldn't be some – I don't know if you're trying to suggest it would be some big disaster if he came and played there. I think he'd be fine.
I don't
personally.
Rule it out. I don't rule out a disaster
well,
at all.
Either way, realistically – Mac Jones, I think, is more of a realistic decision.
I got another idea.
Also, real quick, people saying Arcand, HN dropped 30 fantasy points last night. What are you talking about? He gets hurt all the time. He was in and out of the lineup all year last year, and he was questionable to play in this game. He had a good game, mostly catching the ball, but I'd say, in general, that's not someone that you pencil in for 17 weeks in any given season, is what I meant by that.
No. Yeah. And they're going to need to probably lean on their running game more now, which is not ideal since you have two of the best receivers in football, two top 10 receivers that you're paying to be top 10 receivers. I just came up with another idea for the Dolphins.
Oh.
So Tom Brady's a free agent.
Mm-hmm.
Who else is a coaching free agent who might help Tom Brady create a system, scheme, and offense that would work?
Josh McDaniels.
Josh McDaniels is available. And if you're...
Not Bill Belichick.
Well, no. And no, that wouldn't work.
But if they all got back together, the three of them.
If you're Mike McDaniel and you're truly looking for the best interest of the Dolphins to win games in 2024, is it the dumbest idea in the world to say you bring in Tom Brady and Josh McDaniels as an offensive consultant to figure out what the hell we're going to do on the fly here to make this offense work?
If you're bringing in Tom Brady, it's not a terrible idea. I mean, it's the same. I put it up there with bringing in Brown and Gronkowski to Tampa. I mean, I think it's that same kind of thing.
Right.
You bring him in there for comfort and for, you know, the idea that, all right, this is who we have and this is how we're going to make it work. And sorry, McDaniel, but we're not going to be doing all this Statue of Liberty crap. Like, we're going to go back to an offense that I'm comfortable running here because I'm 47 years old and I'm not going to sit here and learn some new offense. Like, that makes plenty of sense, honestly.
Do you think there's any shot in hell that A, has the call been made, B, that Brady would pick up and listen?
I think Brady would pick up and listen.
Didn't he already say that? Didn't he say that earlier this year?
That he would pick up, that he would listen?
Yeah, I think he did at some point.
I think he did, but I think he was, I don't know, it sounded like he was BSing a little bit, if I recall correctly. Yeah, definitely.
He's a tease. He's a little bit like the Boston Red Sox. He's a tease.
Yeah, well, yeah, the Red Sox are getting C-blocked right now, that's for sure. 617-779-7937 is your phone number. We're going to get into the Red Sox in just a moment here, and that was a tough one last night. I was excited for the series. Big damper gets put on it with a walk-off win from the Yankees there, and one that the Red Sox could have had, they should have had, and just could not quite close the deal. They now fall to 4.5 games back in the wild card. We'll get into that next. Well, at least it was entertaining, right, Andy? At least they had an entertaining game. Ends up with a Red Sox loss, but it was a close one, a close game at Yankee Stadium. Red Sox falling. Unfortunately, in a game that they certainly needed, they need all of them going forward here. And the offense, once again, completely silenced, muffled, whatever you want to say, by Nestor Cortez. 5 innings, 3 hits, a run on 9 strikeouts. He did give up the 1 home run, the solo home run to Danny Jansen, of all people, their right-handed power bat. He's able to go out there and do that. Gleyber Torres with a home run in the first inning, and then you heard Juan Soto just there, and that was all the offense you had in the entire game with that RBI single to score the ghost runner in the 10th inning. The Red Sox unable to do so. I always feel like if the game's going to extra inning and the Red Sox are on the road, they're going to win. And I feel that way about any team that's the away team. When you get past that 9th inning and there's a tie, it just always seems like they have the advantage. They get the first crack at it with the runner in scoring position. And generally, I just feel like it's a big advantage then for the away team. But the Red Sox, unable to do it, unable to get even the 1 run. It says you're supposed to get 2. If you really want to put the game away in the extra innings, but unable to even get the 1 against a shaky Yankee bullpen. And not that we need to keep pouring dirt on this team, but it seems like it's time to stick the fork in them, yeah?
Yeah. I mean, they'll probably win tonight because that's kind of the back and forth, up and down, left and right that they do. But
kind of, yeah.
They went quietly and quickly in the top of the 10th. That, like, did you ever think for a second, other than the runner being on second base, it was like there was never even a jolt of hope or opportunity? And then it went just as quickly, but not quietly, for the Yankees in the bottom of the 10th. It was an entertaining game if you like low-scoring games. Now, I know Alex Cora talked to us the other day about low-scoring games, and yeah, baseball fans like them, but we need to score some runs. We need to have some, you know, start putting crooked numbers on the board. Who said they don't get anything out of their trade deadline acquisitions? Danny Jansen.
Yeah.
You do extra innings against the Yankees in a must-win game, and you lost.
Your only run there. Rafael Devers continues to struggle. He did not do much in this game. And yeah, you're right. I mean, that 10, it was 7 pitches that you saw in the entire
inning. It was
inning.
Over. It was like I was distracted. I don't know what you were doing. Were you two screening it? Were you doing the two screens?
I was indeed two screening it. I was actually at a local establishment near my house, and they didn't have the football game, so I had that on my phone and was watching the Red Sox game up on the TV there. So,
See, I was the flip. I had the football game on the TV, and I had the Red Sox game on my phone, and it went quickly on my phone, and it was like, nah. Because I was thinking, like, if this gets interesting, maybe I'll swap them. I never had the opportunity to really swap them. They were no longer batting, and it was on to the Yankees, and then the Yankees put you away quickly. And
by that time, the Bills had comfortably won that game. It was you didn't have to stay up late last night. Let's put it that way.
Oh no, yeah, no. I was quite comfortable going to bed after the way that football game played out. But it's just too little, too late. We continue to say it. Like they're wasted opportunities, wasted days, as Cora kept saying. And the opportunity continues to be there because teams are losing. I think everybody except Minnesota lost yesterday. Mm-hmm. Is that, I believe, what it was? I believe Minnesota was the only team in the mix, in the wild card mix hunt of that chase, that won.
Detroit lost. Did Minnesota even play yesterday? They might not have played.
Oh, I thought they won.
Let me double check that. But yeah, either way, it was, Detroit definitely lost to Colorado before that game even started. And the Twins
lost.
The Mariners lost to the Rangers.
Yeah.
The Twins didn't play yesterday. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah.
So that's why they couldn't lose.
That's why you only lost the half game.
Maybe everybody would have lost if they had actually played a game, because that's where it feels like right now with the American League and this wild card chase. But it's not even a chase. It's like, who drowns first? Or I don't even know what to compare it to. This is the worst run towards a postseason that you could possibly have. It's like no one wants it. It's like no one.
It does
really
seem
wants
like that. It seems like none of these teams are willing to just grab the thing and take it, which is unfortunate. You know, like it's just everybody has an opportunity. Everybody's sort of given chance after chance after chance here to grab this thing by the throat and just take it to the finish line. None of them will do it, and none of them will make. None of them will jump in for the other teams that aren't doing it. Like it's really been kind of tough to watch, you know, like none of these teams really seem ready to take charge and go to the playoffs, which
no,
is
they're all backing in.
Right.
They're all absolutely backing into the postseason. Now, who once you get in, that doesn't really matter. Maybe it changes or maybe we're in store for a bad postseason because all of these teams are playing bad baseball down the stretch and aren't necessarily getting into to postseason form. The other thing that was sort of lacking is, you know, this idea that we've been talking about who's going to be the spark. Well,
yeah.
We got the answer. Nobody.
No one. Yeah. This team was 0 for 11 last night with runners in scoring position. They had 11 chances with runners in scoring position.
Ouch.
Devers 0 for 1. Abreu 0 for 2. Duran, Story, Cassis, Rafaela. Like, you're good hitters. These are your guys. Like, it's not like it was all bottom of the order schlubs here. You know, guys that are, you didn't really care. Like, Romy Gonzalez, no offense to him. But, like, you had your main guys. Like, these are Duran, Devers, all of them. Story, Cassis. Like, these are the guys you want up there in those situations. No one can come through right now.
And I know
I mean, that's brutal. You saw some of these guys, when Cortez was out there, he was blowing guys away. Like, they didn't have a chance against him.
Well, they are in a bad place, in a bad way, as my Auntie Linda used to say. As hitters, they're in a bad way when they go to the plate. And then, you know, they had the last minute ref Snyder hurt his wrist or wrist discomfort from BP or whatever the hell
right.
happened.
And then he
there.
Came out and pinch ran.
And then he did come out and pinch run. But, it just felt like that was seen as almost like a blow. And do things all have to fall apart if Ref Snyder can't play? Is that really where we are? You know,
against lefties? Kind of, yeah. Like, really,
yeah,
against lefties, we are in that spot, unfortunately. That's where we're at.
Kind of sad.
Yeah.
That's kind of probably for people like you who said, well, how come you didn't do more? Why is Cora going up against lefties with a, you know, taking a knife to a gunfight kind of thing?
Yeah, exactly. Tanner Houck getting the start tonight will go against Clark Schmidt, who is a good pitcher for the Yankees, but he's been out basically all year with quad tightness, not even like a serious injury, but he just got back. He's made one or two starts, I want to say, and is a guy that is certainly someone that New York's been waiting to get back into their rotation. Houck has been good, not great lately. I think everybody on that rotation has been pretty good, pretty solid. He had a good start from Criswell last night. Really, I thought the pitching was fine. Boozer had a tough third of an inning there, but they got him out of there and they finished that inning. So all in all, I'd say you're getting what you want from your pitching staff, and it's just the offense continuing to let this team down night in and night out, which is the worst possible time for that to happen. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. Quick break.